Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, two fellow podcasters are joining me for a special episode where we're going to discuss the passion and positivity of fandom. From communities to conventions to panels to fan interactions, this week, it's all about the positive aspects of fandom as we've experienced it. Let's get on with the show. Okay, my name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me from the Walking Dead cast in Podcastica, Jason Gabassi.
Hello.
Hello.
Glad to be here.
And he's been a podcaster for years, most notably for tuning into Sci-Fi TV, Tales of the Black Badge, and Arrow. We'll talk a little bit about those later. Kevin Beshelder.
Hello, gang.
I always think I say your name wrong. Did I say it right?
No, it's close enough. There's lots of variations. I go with whatever anybody says.
I'm exactly the same.
Same here. Yeah. Peterson's very, very complicated.
Well, long as you got the podcast name right, I don't care about the rest of it.
My wife says it different than my mom, so I have to decide which one to go with.
Seriously?
My wife likes the fancy Kabassi, but my mom says it's Kabassi.
It seems very overly complicated, and mom just doesn't want to accept it. Or wife doesn't, one of the two. So here's what we're talking about. In an era of outrage, entitlement, overwrought petitions, we wanted to spend one entire episode devoted to the joy of fandom. So for the next hour or so, we're going to have a very open and candid discussion on the positivity and passion of fandom as we've experienced it, hopefully to shine a light on how so much lately has gotten lost in sensationalism in search of that next big outrage. And because we've all done a lot with fan podcasts, their respective shows, communities, etc., we'll probably be mentioning actors or showrunners. And I just want to preface this with, it's not name dropping. It's just we're sharing genuine experiences. So please don't take it as, oh, you guys just can't stop mentioning names. You know, I don't want that. So opening question, let's start with you, Jason. In this day and age, and I'm specific to you because I know right now, the show you're most known for is getting a lot of criticism. Is it possible to be critical even of a property you love and remain positive?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, actually, you're talking about Walking Dead,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right now, technically.
The most recent season, actually, it's kind of staging a comeback, but the two before that
really
took a lot of heat, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, my goal with podcasting has always been to enhance this show or thing or whatever it is that we're all a fan of, to provide an enhanced experience of that. So it's never been my focus to pick it apart or find the problems. That said, when something comes up that's, you know, obviously needs to be talked about because everybody's talking about it, then we will absolutely mention it. But it's just not the focus. You know, the focus is, hey, we love this thing and we love it so much that we want to spend more time thinking about it and talking about it than just watching it. And people who also want to do that come and listen to us. So I think there's some criticism in there, but it's all done in this sort of larger container of appreciation. And so that's how we do it. I mean, if I did get to a point, and I have with one show that I used to podcast on where I just didn't like it anymore, then I would just stop, which I did.
How did the fans, because yeah, I was one of those. I was one of those Walking Dead fans for like that 2-year window, the Negan era.
Yes.
The heavy Negan era, where you had, it was hard to talk to other fans of the show because you could be enjoying it and there would be a lot of vitriol and upsetness over things that were transpiring. How did you see the fan community dealing with that, the positive side of that? I mean, how did you see them spinning that to try to find the positives in it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, one interesting thing about podcasting and having this like appreciation focus that I just mentioned is when we come in and sit down in front of our mics and get ready to talk about an episode that neither one of us liked that much. Mm-hmm. Almost every time we're done talking about it, we like it better. Because when you're diving into something like that, you find things that maybe weren't so apparent at first, you know, little connections or the way they stage something or whatever, we almost always wake each other up to what was good about it. And then I think we attract fans who feel the same way, that they're here because they want to appreciate the show, not that they want to tear it apart. And so then even when they come in feeling like, oh, I didn't like this one, after they're finished hearing us, I've gotten a lot of feedback saying that, oh, I did like it more. And so then it becomes a thing where they're like wanting to listen to the podcast so that we can help them like something more that they didn't like.
Right.
I don't know if that answered your question. I mean, there were a lot of people left The Walking Dead during those years. You know, the ratings have been going down, and I totally respect that. Like, if you just decide that it's not your thing anymore, there's no reason to stick around and force yourself to watch it and not enjoy the experience. I mean, and some of my friends, good friends, who used to podcast with me about Walking Dead have stopped watching it, and they don't sit there and badmouth it or try to judge anybody who's still watching or convince anyone not to watch it. They're just like, no, I'm done. And that's fine too, you know?
Absolutely. And Kevin,
I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did, because I'm trying to find, well, as a group, I'm hoping we can find the positive angles to how people and fans especially deal with things that are less enjoyable, because we're mm-hmm. going to be talking about all the great enjoyable things. And I thought that we'd just knock this one out of the way. Kevin, you've got Wynonna Earp, which people still love that show. So it's not really in that band camp of being too criticized, but you did do Arrow for several years, and that one has had to deal with that quite a bit. How do you perceive this concept of being critical, but also remaining positive in fandom?
Well, I think a lot of it for me, and looking at it, comes down to what the expectations are when you go into it. I mean, if you take something like Arrow, for example, I mean, that's something that had years and years of fans from the comics before it came to TV. So a lot of folks, when they came in for the show, you know, in a nice way, but kind of had the arms crossed. Okay, let's see what this can do. So some folks come in feeling ownership of a property, or even something mm-hmm. like a TV show, kind of like Jason's talking about a little bit, and it could be any show. Once it gets several years in, many folks start to think of it as, do my air quotes, their show. And if it starts doing things that they don't like, that's when they start feeling like you've messed with them. And that's why some shows, be it Wynonna Earp or others, especially in their early seasons, does tend to be a little more positive in nature if it clicks at all with someone that they're still watching. So, you know, that expectations can kind of do that. Too, in terms of what it becomes. And also, it's tough with something like an Arrow. When you have cast members coming and going, and therefore stories have to change to accommodate that, you know, that can also drive some folks to start looking at things and saying, it ain't got what I want anymore. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, there's just some fans who, rather than, and Jason mentioned a little earlier, rather than being the type who just go, okay, it's just not for me, but, you know, best of luck to you as a fan, they somehow feel like they have to bash on it. I mean, that's, I think, just some personality types that feel they have to almost justify why they let it go. Whereas, you know, I think we're kind of in an amazing time in terms of how many TV shows we have to pick from. If something's not your bag anymore, man, there's probably another 10 or 20 that might be just, you know.
Or 1,000. Say,
yeah.
Yeah, or 1,000. Pass and go find something else. This isn't the 70s or something where we had three, you know, shows to pick from.
I know. There's some of these shows these days that I give it a shot to, and I'm like, it was pretty good, but I just don't have time for a new show, where if it was around in the 70s, it would have been my favorite show.
Yeah. We just had, I mean, it was really hard as a fan of Game of Thrones just recently, because I was enjoying the season. I know there's a lot of criticisms, and I understand, but it was so hard to have real conversations with people without them just jumping to the, I felt like there's a lot of people that felt it was important to find things they didn't like about it, as opposed to trying mm-hmm. to enjoy it like we've talked about. And I agree, the more you talk about it with other people, the more you seem to like a property. I mean, the more you can kind of get around the things that bothered you in some aspects. And
two, I mean, Game of Thrones, I was also doing a Game of Thrones podcast, and my co-host for season 8 hated what happened at the end. And I loved it. I mean, I thought there were some problems with it. It was rushed, but I liked the way the story went. And so it was a really fun challenge to have such opposed points of view about something and still have like a respectful, interesting conversation, because we really felt both strongly about it, especially her. And so that's one thing that I've learned. I mean, I think podcasting has made me a better person because I learned how to listen to other people and not think that I have to prove to them that I'm right about everything, but more just, if we don't agree, that's okay. And it's interesting anyway. And so we did that. And I think, I don't know, maybe this is like a little self-aggrandizing or something, but I think it's when you model that for people who are listening, they actually appreciate it. We get a lot of comments saying, I love how you guys have different points of view and yet, you know, you can still speak respectfully about it. So that was what was cool about that. Also, I liked that it went the way I wanted. So that was great.
Does tend to cloud our judgment, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Well, and it's true because fans do, they keep you honest if you're doing a podcast. Because when I was doing Westworld, Kevin, you know, you're one of our admins in that group. I don't know if you noticed, but I got eaten alive because every time I was critical of anything, I mean, I was a dick and I was this and I was that.
Right.
And you're trying to be fair, but then you go back and you're like, all right, enough people have said this. Maybe I should go listen to how I'm presenting it. Mm-hmm. And it was, and part of it was me. I mean, I don't think my criticisms were invalid, but I was personally so frustrated in certain aspects that it came across that way. And I'm like, oh, I'm becoming one of those fans that I complain about.
But I don't recommend anyone do this, but the Star Wars Force Awakens review that we did on Walking Dead Cast, because we do other things during the off season, mm-hmm. I was a total a-hole on there. And I learned if you ever do anything and you suddenly get like 5 1-star reviews on iTunes, you should maybe pay attention.
Yeah. Yep.
And so that taught me a lesson. Like, I can disagree, but if I turn into a jerk about it, then listeners aren't going to like that. And I think that's kind of the same. You're right. The same vibe that you get these days with just fans railing on things.
And I think it's interesting to me too. And as we all talk about it, being folks who podcast, we know we have to have things to talk about. Mm-hmm. And trying to, shall we say, look on the bright side sometimes is more work than just reacting to something we may or may not like. So I think as podcasters, we've got a little bit of responsibility sometimes to think it through in terms of where we're going. If we truly want to have an engaged audience that doesn't sometimes just rail back at us on some of these things. So it's got to kind of learn as you go a little bit. I know I found it interesting on the Winona Earp side. Myself and my podcast co-host, just by nature, are positive people. That's just our style. That's how we roll, period. And we did get some comments, very respectful, but we did get some comments when we started to really build a bigger audience and such that were being too nice. We weren't finding things wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, at first I'm like, well, that's just my personality. But then as I, like you're saying, Jason, too, when you go back or Aaron and listen to some stuff, I realized, you know, maybe that wasn't the best storyline there. And we didn't really say anything about it because, you know, that's just not our style. But if you truly want to represent your community, sometimes you got to be willing to, you know, course correct or adjust or look at it a little differently, too.
Yeah, just be open to the as fans in general, not just podcasts, but as fans in general, just be open to the idea that maybe you're being too harsh on it. Maybe you're not being harsh enough to, maybe you're not.
Yeah.
Seeing what other people are seeing and just take a step back and pay attention to that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And that is why I like having someone who disagrees with me actually as a co-host, because then you both get to represent different listeners' point of view. And
yeah,
I think that's a good.
It's always a plus. So mm-hmm. we're going to move into some open discussion topics, fan communities where we're going to start at. And we're going to talk about conventions. We're going to talk about Save TV campaigns. We're going to talk about personal experiences, but we're going to start with communities. So let's talk about fan communities. And before we talk about the ones you are most familiar with and involved in, do you guys remember your first feeling that you were part of one yourself? Kevin, do you remember the first fan community you felt a part of?
On any level, I'm old enough to say it was the X-Files back in its run in the 90s. But then you're talking about bulletin boards and Usenet on the internet. That wasn't exactly, you know, high level interaction. But as far as some real depth for me, I know where it became a lot more personal and I really started to know some of the people in the community more than just them as fans of what I was a fan of. To a great degree for me was Firefly in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. The Browncoats and that community really, when I jumped in there, were very welcoming, and the individuals, some of which are still friends now going, you know, 10, 15 years later, really made an indelible mark for me.
Jason, what about you?
I mean, I was pretty involved with Lost, but more as a lurker, though. So I wasn't really known. And I think, you know, I would definitely go in and read and even post sometimes, but not enough to be known. So I think really starting my own podcast on The Walking Dead was what really got me to be a part of a fan community.
Mine's also Firefly, which is funny that you mentioned that. I didn't even realize I was part of a community until Serenity was announced. And I'm like, wow, there's a documentary, right? There's a documentary that was coming out about the Brown Coat movement. And I got that and watched it and saw all these people that were acting just as crazy as I was in private and didn't realize I was part of this group.
So there you go. That would have been your first introduction to me because I was in that documentary.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's true. Yes, that's true. That's true. And I remember, I think it was probably Rotten Tomatoes. Like, they had Threads back then, right? I'm trying to remember. I think it was more Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like that. Message boards where you start communicating
forums.
With people.
Yeah.
Forums, right. And you end up being part of that. And there's like a bunch of us that ended up seeing Serenity in the theater. We're the only people there, but still, you felt like part of a group. It was an amazing feeling.
Yeah, and it was actually my enjoyment of the couple of the forums for Firefly that I found that led me to get into podcasting, because there was a thread started on one of them that, like, hey, we're going to start a podcast. And at that time, I was like, what the hell's a podcast? I had no idea what it was. This is
right.
2005. So not pretty well known then. And so we just kind of dived in as a group to start working on this thing that was a podcast. And it was just a fun way to interact with other fans at the time, and then led to the even bigger pool of podcasting from there too. So it's all connected.
So that was your first podcast experience?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We worked on the Signal podcast.
yeah.
And that getting involved in that podcast, this is the summer of 2005. As you were saying, Aaron, this was Serenity. The movie came out in the fall,
right.
September. And that was also the year that many of the cast of Firefly / Serenity we're going to be at Dragon Con. And talking about fandoms, I had heard about Dragon Con for many years. It was a big convention for sci-fi geeks. I said, yeah, somebody may be able to go. And because there were going to be Firefly guests there and a couple of the other podcasting folks, I took the leap and went to Dragon Con for the first time there in 2005. And I've never looked back. I've been every year since, because that community, which is fans of many different things, led me to many now lifelong friends. Because it was that passion. It's sharing the passion and seeing it in other folks there. So these things build on themselves, certainly in my experiences for the last, 15, 20 years.
Well, speaking of, let's talk about that. Building your respective fan communities, participating in other groups and communities, how you and other fans remain positive in this era of increasing negativity. I think we can all agree. We each have groups due to our podcast and other interests. And most of the people that I'm aware of are pretty positive in all of those. So how do you guys, how did you cultivate your community? How did you build it? And how do you keep it positive? And how do you see the fans keeping it positive? Jason?
I mean, I think because Karen, my Walking Dead co-host, and I went in just excited and wanted to have fun, mostly, mm-hmm. we wanted to have fun. It's interesting because some podcasts, I feel like they consider themselves more reviewers and it's their job to pick something apart. But like I said earlier, our job was to help enhance people's experience of whatever we were covering and to have fun with it. And I told Karen when we started, if we're not having fun anymore, then we should just quit. And that was 9 years ago and we're still having fun. But I think that is infectious to the people who listen. And we've had reviews saying we're too nice and then other reviews saying we're too negative. And I'm like, oh, interesting. But I think the people who don't jibe with what we're doing eventually just fall away. And so we're just left with the ones who want to have fun with it. And so they're more likely to, if not always have a positive attitude, at least have a patient attitude so that if things aren't going the way they want for a little while, that maybe they'll stick around and see if it improves, mm-hmm. We've also had several people say that they keep watching only because they want to hear us podcast about it.
Yeah,
which is, I get that, pretty funny. Yeah,
that's like the under the dome effect, where people were still podcasting about that show that was awful.
That's such a compliment. I almost always want to say, don't do that. But anyway, yeah, I just think if the way to keep it positive is just to be positive ourselves, and then you tend to get people who are more positive. But you know, it's weird, because there is like criticism, quote unquote, but it's rarely raging or anything like that. It's just more discussion, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, I would have liked it better if it was this, or things like that, which I think is fine. I don't think it's bad to have kind of constructive criticism about something that you're covering.
No, I feel it's important to have legitimate criticism and discussion. Sometimes you end up, people wade into the conversation where they obviously just want to pick it apart, as opposed to actually have a discussion. And that's where I just withdraw myself. You know, I'll say what I have to say, and I'll be like, okay, well, mm-hmm. you think what you want, but I'm going to walk away from this one. I already said my piece.
I mean, I know what Kevin was saying earlier about how when you're a fan of something for a while, then you feel like it's yours, and then mm-hmm. it does something to disappoint you. I've had that experience, and it really hurts. And you're like, no, come on, what are you doing? And so you have to figure out how to deal with that. And I think, you know, once it's done, then... I mean, it is interesting these days, like how there's all these petitions and stuff. And you think about how if back in the 80s we'd had this internet community, then a lot of things that everybody felt disappointed about but did not realize that there were other kids in houses all around that also felt disappointed. So they just went, oh, well, you know, because they couldn't get together and make this huge echo effect about it. So I don't know. I'm kind of rambling a little bit.
No, no, not at all. You know what? We found for our respective groups, like Blacklist and Westworld and whatnot, we found that we clearly state what the rules of the community are, which are, you know, we try to avoid spoilers, and we you know, just be respectful mm-hmm. and whatever. You keep it very simple. You keep it very clear. And then people typically will follow them. I mean, and if they don't, you just address it and you move on. And I've just felt, you know, it's amazing to me how many groups and different communities don't have any set rules, and you just go in there and it's just a free for all. I mean, Reddit is a prime example. It's just like a free for all. Just go ahead and rip on everything you can think of. Mm-hmm. But if you go to a group where there's a community with an understanding, or you have a good group of people that have already come to that understanding, you don't seem to have that problem. It seems to only happen in these Wild West communities that are just open to anyone.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, I also think it helps to have, for podcasts, you set the tone, mm-hmm. you know? So, because we do say, please don't spoil anything, but we've never even really said, please be respectful, unless someone wasn't being respectful, but that's been really rare. But I feel like people kind of follow our tone, and where on Reddit, you don't have a focal point like that to follow.
The thing I was going to add there too, when you talk about these communities, we talk about them, you know, online communities. I think a lot too is going to be driven by the platform that you're using. Facebook groups. I mean, you can have admins. You can clearly state the rules. You can kick somebody out. There are ways to kind of manage that. But in our case, certainly in the Wynonna Earp fandom, that fandom lives and breathes and has kept the show on the air because of the activity on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And there is no way to quote unquote manage it or control it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's its own set of different challenges sometimes of dealing with it you know, the different subsets, you know, using hashtags and other ways to kind of narrow things down. So it's just fascinating, because we set up a Facebook group as well for our podcast and for the show, and have some clear set rules. And for the most part, as Jason's saying, you know, it's very respectful. But the interesting thing is, as in our case, the little cult show started to get a little more well known and such, and membership started to grow significantly, you started to see folks, especially newer members, who are now coming in sharing illegal links to downloads. Mm. And especially if they're outside the U.S., that's just the norm, you know, and when we try to state that, A, it's not, you know, we don't allow it. And also, hey, we actually have several people, actors and crew from the show in the group. So you're basically taking money out of their pocket here. It's even another level of disrespect. There's still folks that just, especially if they live outside the U.S., many folks just like, that's the norm, you know, you know, whatever it might be, whatever name your file sharing service here, that's okay. So you do have, as your communities get bigger or you have different platforms, different sets of rules based on geography and so forth, and that can make it a challenge.
And by the way, I'm not knocking Reddit. For anybody listening, it's like, well, I ain't hating on Reddit. No, I think Reddit's great. I just don't know how you can manage that. It's so wide open.
Yeah, Reddit is a broader spectrum of things, and you can find awesome, amazing, informational stuff and like just nasty, dark stuff on there.
It's all over. Twitter's kind of the same way in many respects, too. So have you guys, in terms of communities, have you guys personally witnessed fans coming to the aid of other fans or maybe reaching out to help them in any way, shape, or form?
Well, in our case, in the ERPer fandom, that is a big part of what the ERPers do. I mean, we, it's some of the folks who have been at the forefront of the Wine Own ERP fandom, started up using certain hashtags. Mm-hmm. We have one that we set up and tell everyone about called ERPer Support, hashtag ERPer Support. And folks are using that when, you know, be it anything from a bad day to, you know, something much more serious in life, whatever. Just, hey, I need a, you know, I could use a kind word or someone to DM with or chat or whatever. So that has become very popular in the ERPer fandom, with folks finding other folks, supporting them, pointing out resources, some folks who, you know, get to the point of very dire situations and life-threatening have been able to step in and assist some folks. So it's made a huge impact there. And it's, you know, something that's a challenge, certainly, because it gets into conversations that are not going to be all naturally positive. And, you know, it can drag some folks down if you're, you know, keeping too much of an eye in that area of things. But definitely seen some major impacts there. And also ERP It Forward, where folks are helping other ERPers with things or their community and so forth. That's a big part of what the Wine Owner fandom has become well known for is things that help other people.
That's amazing.
That's very cool.
I love that.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have a Facebook group of podcast listeners who are mostly fans of Walking Dead, and they've all become good friends. And they, you know, if somebody's having a rough time, I mean, there's been over the last few years, people have had lost jobs or gotten hurt, and everybody always rushes in to offer support and love and advice and everything like that. I don't know if that counts.
Absolutely.
As far as what you're saying, but yeah, it's been really, that's been one of my favorite things that's developed all about out of all this is just that group that has gotten together to bond over this TV show and just become friends to the point where they're meeting. They had a big barbecue and Philadelphia, I think, and I couldn't get out there, so I just saw the pictures, but it looked really fun.
We had a really cool moment for Blacklist fans where there was a very cool nod to fans directly. It was honestly one of these things where it just made me cry, and I was actually completely surprised and taken aback. But there was a diehard fan named Lulu McClellan. She worshipped the show. I mean, everything on her Facebook profile was Blacklist, everything on her Twitter. I mean, she just lived and died Blacklist. And, well, that's probably a bad choice of words because she did sadly pass away. Well, we mentioned it a couple times. Fans mentioned it. People were mentioning, we were talking about Lulu because she did pass away and how much she kind of meant to the community because she was one of those fans who just stood out because she was in every discussion, every debate, everything. I mean, she was always there. Very, very kind person. And what happened was one random episode, it was just a random episode. The main character, who's Red Reddington, who's played by James Spader, he was in desperate need of help to get out of a situation. I don't remember what the situation was. And along comes this character named Lulu McClellan to save him. And it was this very surreal, beautiful moment of connection. You know, as we're all watching it, and we're like, wait, what? And you realize that they did that and they put that in there. They actually cleared it with her sister and everything else just to pay homage and respect to a fan that passed away. And actually it happened one other time where another fan that was a diehard fan passed away, Joey, and same thing. They put him in the show and they made mention of the character in the show. Just like that to me is one of those things where you don't expect it. You definitely don't even feel it's necessary. It's just one of those very, very nice, respectful things that a show did to honor their fans. And I've that's one of the, it just blew me away. Absolutely blew me away.
Charities come up too. There's been some charities in the Walking Dead community for animal, abused animals, taking them and putting them into homes and things like that.
See, fans care.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do big time, because as Jason said, it's what happens in these communities, whatever the platform, let's face it, is that we all want to connect with people we think are like us to some degree, maybe a lot or maybe only a little. And oftentimes a certain TV show is that, you know, way that we get in there, or in the case of Dragon Con, a certain love of, you know, that community. And when you can find those folks who are like you, you know, let's face it, we all, life moves so fast, there's a million things going on, a lot of other things on our time. And when you can find something that makes you truly happy, and you can share that with someone else, you consider yourself close to them. So when they have something that's not going well, you know, let's face it, we all want to help them. And that's what then shows when you have that true connection. Folks step up, whether it's financial or just a kind word or a resource or just being there to say, how's your day going? That's when we turn these things that are TV show focused instead to become people focused.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wish people understood that fandom in entertainment is no different than fandom of anything else. It was probably like 3 months ago, I think, I was at work, and there was a guy who was very, very Star Trek focused, you know, and I don't watch Star Trek, so I don't understand much of that, but he cares very much about Star Trek. He's all about it. And there was a guy in the break room kind of giving him grief, and this guy's wearing like a Chicago Bears shirt and a Chicago Bears hat, you know, and you can tell he's a fan, and he's just kind of giving him grief about being a Star Trek fan. I'm just sitting here going, I don't think you understand. That is no different, man. That is, right. It's just a love of something.
Yeah. When was that?
That was just a couple months ago.
Oh man. See, I think, geekdom has been so much more societally acceptable over the years, but still it's not complete yet.
Well, there's still some, and he wasn't being mean or anything. He was just kind of razzing him a little bit because he was talking about Discovery. Is that that's the
current one? Yes. Right.
Yeah. And he was talking about that, and the guy was just kind of razzing him. I don't watch Star Trek. Come on, man. There's better things to do. And da da da. I'm just like, okay, like football. I get it. I like football.
Watch sports.
Yeah, sports ball.
Well, the great thing that relates to that too that I saw was Dragon Con takes place in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Over Labor Day weekend, tens of thousands of attendees. A few years ago, they started doing the college football kickoff games, beginning of the season, and at least one or two of them were happening in Atlanta. So, you know, Dragon Con's at downtown hotels, and so you ended up with Dragon Con attendees and also folks who are in town just for the college football games. And, you know, Dragon Con is known as being probably the con in the entire world as far as the outstanding cosplay. But let's face it, a lot of great cosplay is also going to really be eye-opening for a lot of, shall we say, non-genre fans.
True.
So, yeah, there would be college football fans just like, what is this? And you're weird, and what's going on? But when you started to break it down and talk to them, oh, so you're here wearing, you know, get your face painted green, whatever it might be. So how are you different than me and my elf costume or whatever it might be? And, you know, while it wasn't always great conversations, there were some really good exchanges sometimes to do just that, Aaron, as you're saying, to realize that whatever you're a passionate fan of, just because there's millions of people on your side of the fence and there's only a few hundred on mine doesn't make it any different.
Exactly. Now let's segue over to fan conventions. It's one thing to gather with friends online. That's relatively easy these days. But let's talk about the in-person experiences, the fan conventions, why they appeal, the logistics of it. Anything you want to talk about in terms of fan conventions. Now, you talked about Dragon Con. Jason, talk to me about Walker Stalker Con. Were you involved from the beginning with this?
Mm-hmm. James Frazier and his partner at the time, Eric, created that. But they had started their own Walking Dead podcast, and they listened to us before they started their own, so they knew of us, and then they I connected with them, and we did a little smaller event before the cons, and so then they asked us if we would come and moderate the panels, and I've been a part of it ever since.
So tell me how that all, I mean, how do you go from the small thing that grows into, I mean, it's in different cities throughout the world, I think, now, right? I mean, it's all over the place.
Yeah, it's all over the US, and we've done shows in Australia, England, and Germany.
So how did you build that? I mean, how did you build it and they came? To use the Field of Dreams
reference. I mean, for me, I'm just kind of a passenger, right? I'm focused on the panels, scheduling the panels and moderating a lot of them and getting moderators for the rest. But I just know that James, you know, he did it. I don't know how he did it, but the show was really popular. You know, The Walking Dead was the most popular drama on TV. And even though it's lost a lot of ratings, it's still one of the most popular shows on TV. But yeah, he just kind of rode that wave of popularity somehow.
And what's that been like for you as you've experienced? Because you've kind of seen people, I assume you've met many people over these years whose life has become intertwined with Walking Dead, with a TV show.
Yeah, so many. I mean, there's a lot of vendors that come, for example, and artists who I've gotten to be friends with, and this has become a primary source of income for them. They come to the shows and sell their art. Even some of the actors, I think, who aren't working right now, they it's been really important for them to be able to do these. Mm-hmm. But they also, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but the actors, it's really cool to see. You can tell some of them are like, all right, I'll try this out. But other ones are just, oh my God, this is so great. I get to connect with the people who are the ones that I'm doing what I'm doing for, and, you know, get some feedback and, you know, play around and make their day and whatever. And they just really get a huge kick out of it. And those are the ones that end up being the most popular, that everybody wants to go and meet, because they just put out the good vibe. So it's real. I mean, I think if I was an actor, I would love that, man. I don't like when I was a substitute teacher and I taught kids and I never got any feedback from anybody. I didn't know if I was doing a good job or not. I think I'd feel that way as an actor. So it'd be really fulfilling to actually touch base with your fans, you know?
Kevin, what about you? What's the appeal for people that, you know, have to go to these conventions? You go to a lot of them. I think you're at one right now, aren't you?
Well, yeah, the Herperdom has started up several, and these are all fan run. They're not actually connected. They are all separate ones with Herpers just in different places, from, you know, London to New Orleans this weekend to Toronto, Minneapolis, you know, and lots more happening and growing up and happening, because people want to connect with other people very much like them, like Jason was saying. And in the case of Wynonna Earp, this is a small fandom. If you look at ratings, you know, we're a drop in the bucket compared to something like The Walking Dead. I mean, you know, I think they may be averaging 500,000 viewers an episode here. But the folks who are fans are so passionate about it, and the kindness and the inclusivity that is very much shown in the show and in the cast and the fans makes the desire to spend time with them and be able to meet some of these people who are related to the show and other fans is just a huge draw. And the folks who run, the fans who run these cons are smart enough that realize that you really want to have that nice intimate experience. So they limit it to maybe 500 or 600 people. So they sell out. But you know you're not going to be overrun with too many long lines and things like that. You'll be able to get into everything you want to get into and so forth and see the people. And it's the Herpers themselves that many of us have now gone to more than one or two of these. That's the main draw now, because you know you're going to get to see fans and friends that you maybe only see once a year and be able to hang out with them and spend time with them and share, you know, what's going on in your life because of what it means and what the show has meant to them. So it's been amazing for me, certainly individually, since we started the podcast before the show even had aired, and developed a great relationship with the cast and have been able to have some amazing experiences because of that, because they've all been great people. And very, as Jason said, many of these actors are the type who appreciate the fans, and that shows in their interactivity on social media and at these conventions, that the chance to go to one and to be, in our case, invited to moderate panels and to be guests. Come on, as fans, I mean, this is it. This is what you hope for, is to have something that people love what you're doing and want to have you around and doing it. So, yeah, I think there's 4 or 5 that I'll be at in the coming months, and I just can't wait for each and every one of them. They all have a slightly different feel and a slightly different approach, But at the core, it's still about being able to spend time with other people you know are passionate about the same thing you are.
You know what I found funny is that we were at C2E2 we were doing panels there, and I feel like when we first start doing this podcast thing and we actually move into a different tier or whatever, and you're doing panels like this, it's very, very, very cool, very exciting. And then you meet the actors and stuff, and it kind of just, you understand that they're just people and you're kind of relating to them as just people. And you, I don't want to say you lose the excitement, but you become accustomed to it, maybe. And I was at, I was there this year, and because of doing panels and stuff, I've kind of become numb to it, especially with the Blacklist. I've met the actors many, many times. So it's kind of like, hey, we're just friendly at that point. And then you see people come up to them and they're shaking and they're excited and they're spitting all over the place because they're so excited and they just want to talk to them and they don't want to mess it up. And they
start crying.
Yes. And then you see the actors on the same token who aren't, I mean, you know, the Blacklist isn't like a Walking Dead or an Arrow or a Winona Earp. It's not really a cult or a genre show. So it's a little different. Most of the fans are relatively, I don't want to say calmer, but they're less intense. You know, it's not a show that gets as extreme fervor as a lot of really specific hard-nosed genre shows do. So a lot of these actors are more accustomed to people just coming up to them and saying hello. These guys that's a different audience. And just seeing the actors respond to that is also a beautiful thing. It's weird to see it firsthand when you're removed from the situation and you're kind of just watching it unfold as opposed to being either the fan or you know, just being behind the scenes. You're actually seeing the actors get excited. You're seeing the fans lose it. It's a really cool thing. And I'm sure both of you have seen that a lot.
Yeah. It's a really high energy environment because just walking around the con, you see people notice somebody. And I have to remember, yeah, in the same way with you, you get kind of used to it. But if you remember what it's like to be in a situation where suddenly the person that you've been watching on TV is suddenly standing over there, just right over there, it's like he's right over there. And I try not to be too much, you know, like put celebrities up on a pedestal,
right?
But it's still hard not to feel that excitement and energy when someone that you've watched on a show is in front of you, you know? Like, I don't want to think of them as somehow a better person than somebody else, but it's still really exciting to get to talk to them.
You don't want to get starstruck, but you still kind of get starstruck.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But they are just people, like you said. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what makes it last. It'd be one thing on any of these cons if any of us were involved in them. And you went and the folks who are on the show weren't the kind of people you wanted to spend time with.
Yeah.
And they did have a you and us approach. That wouldn't last. You know, these cons wouldn't be going on again, you know, Walker Stalker or any of these Erper cons if that was the case, because then, you know, that information also travels like wildfire in a fandom. So the fact that they are people that we want to spend some time with or just get a chance to say hello. And in many cases, certainly in the Erper side of things, you know, these can be life-changing experiences for many folks. And the great thing with the Erp cast, too, since many of them are very much unknown when the show started, they've stayed very grounded. They thank the fans. They realize the show is still on the air because of the fans. Mm-hmm. So that's something that they can appreciate and have been very open with us in interviews since we've developed a great relationship and been honest and very frank about some challenges they've faced, you know, when you have this sudden popularity and how to, you know, deal with some of that, the ups and downs of it. So that's allowed it to stay grounded, too, on a lot of these things. But for us, yeah, being involved, it's, as you were saying, it's kind of changed, but it's also, for me, gotten much more emotional in many cases because I see more of these experiences happening. Mm-hmm. And also, we've been very blessed that a lot of folks share that with us as well, to right. tell them what our podcast has done, and other folks who started podcasts because of what we did. You know, and you know, it, yeah, the time that there's folks lining up to get my autograph or photo, that I'm not ever going to forget that. And not in the sense of I go to do it all the time, but because it just, like, why would you want that? And it's more of the, understanding why we do what we do, and that you, well, you just share your passion, you talk about what you love on that show, and there's no judgment of it. You know, it's not, you're not doing it because you're trying to get to attend these cons. You're doing it because you love the content, just like all of us do. Right. So it's, they're able to identify with it. And I, at first I didn't see that or know that, you know, it just seemed odd. So it's allowed me to see the bigger picture a lot more by having these experiences myself when I talk to them at the conventions too.
I did a thing, because I'm just like, I think that's weird. I mean, not that I'm not that I'm holding it against them. I'm just like, why would you want my autograph? And that's happened as well. And it's just like, why? So mm-hmm. when people have asked for it, you know, I always make them sign something of mine too, because to me, it's just, I'm just one of you. There's literally no difference. I'm not making the product. I'm just talking about it, you know, that kind of thing. But it's amazing to me how people really get invested in what you're saying, because you love the show too. So they get kind of attached to your voice, or they get attached to your thoughts on something, and they have the same connection to you as they have the TV show. And it's wonderful. It's a great experience across the board.
Well, we have to think about it too. Nowadays, especially with podcasting, think about it. We come into their homes, into their cars and their work day. A lot of folks who are stuck at desk jobs that they don't like, you know, listening to the podcast and listening to people gives them some enjoyment in what they're doing. And certainly in an audible form, you know, when we're talking about something, you know, and certainly in Wynonna Earp with some emotional storylines, they can very much attach to it. It seems, it makes it real. And that's where, you know, the wanting to have a photo with you or an autograph is when they get to have fun going back to the friends in their local area, and they're all talking about it to say, yes, I experienced it. I understood what was going on too. So it makes it real for some of them is what it is too.
Mm-hmm. Somebody is sitting at their crappy desk job right now hearing my voice.
That's true. It is true.
It does happen. So, I mean, that's what I lose. I know I lose sight of it sitting here just recording with the two of you, thinking it's just the three of us, and then forgetting that there's going to be thousands of people listening.
Right.
And you know, that impacts people.
Before I started podcasting, I was a really big fan of the Jay and Jack Lost podcast. I don't know if either one of you guys. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I went and saw, they did a panel at Comic-Con one time, and then Karen and I actually got to have them on our podcast for an interview. And we'd had most of the Walking Dead cast members by that point. We'd interviewed them, but I was more nervous talking to Jay and Jack than anybody. I don't know why, but I remember that.
I totally get it, man. I was at South By doing coverage for the South By Southwest Film Festival, and you've got Paul Scheer and Jason Mantzoukas are right there, and I bumped into Paul Scheer, and I'm a huge fan. He does How Did This Get Made? I don't know if you ever listened to it, but and I'm sitting, you know, you see celebrities throughout this film festival. I don't really get bothered by it or even starstruck by it, because they're just like people hanging out watching the movie. But I got that's pretty much how I was, because I'm like, well, I've looked up to this guy and what he's done with his podcast for years. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just, it's no different. I don't care who you are. It's no different. And you speaking about Comic-Con, I got to mention, since we're talking about conventions, how they don't let Hall H, if you don't know what Hall H is, that's the big hall where they host everything, where the big panels, and they don't let it out in between panels. So that means you could literally stay there all day, and that is what people do. They stay there all day. So every night, if you're at Comic-Con and you go outside, you'll find people camped out. Like, these are the fan, like the diehard fans who are willing to spend the night. And I mean, it's beautiful San Diego, but they're willing to spend the night outside just so that next day they can get the best seat possible. And you're kind of, you know, you're walking around at night going, well, that's silly. And then you go the next day and you can't get into Hall H, but these people are like in front row, and you kind of understand where they're coming from. But I have a whole new respect for them after I've actually attended Comic-Con. It's amazing to me how much your opinion of things can change once you witness it for yourself.
Yeah, totally. I mean, when I was younger, I went to Comic-Con, and the wait times have just gotten longer and longer over the years. So
yeah.
at that time, I think it was like a 3-hour wait or something. So you just had to show up early. And I did. I camped out in Hall H all day. And it was just a great feeling to be there and have a parade of stars come in front of you and some things that you don't care that much about. But you got to sit there because you need to save your spot. And then you learn about something new that you didn't know about before.
Do you guys have a favorite story about, because we've all hosted panels, about a fan asking a question to what really just spoke to you or just caught you off guard emotionally?
Do you have one?
Not off the top of my head. No, I was just...
Not off the top of your head. I mean, it's you say that and I'm like, God, I've literally heard thousands of questions and nothing really springs up. One time, this is not what spoke to me. I don't know why this came up, but somebody asked one of the actors to go to prom and she said no. And he got up and walked away with his head held low. And I just said, that was a gutsy question, man. I just wanted to try and make him feel better as he slinked out of there.
I know I had fun at the Acon Canada was in Toronto for Winona last year. And I was moderating the last panel on the last day, the full cast panel. And it had been an emotional weekend. It was really a wonderful convention. And as happens, these cast members, they work hard, man. They're between photos, autographs, meet and greets, panels, it's a long weekend. And I could tell, you know, as a moderator now, having done this enough, you know, you prepare some questions, you got this idea about the season, you want to ask about a scene, Within the first 5 minutes, most of the answers were all sexual innuendo jokes. and I could tell this thing was going to, you know, in a perfectly fun way, go totally off the rails, and I was going to have to throw my questions out. And the thing that told me it was time to do that was when I turned to Dominique Provost-Chalkley, who plays Waverly, total sweetheart. And I said, I asked her a question about something in the show. Dom, you did really good at da 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 da. So what were you thinking at that time? And she's literally sitting there with like her hand on her chin, staring at me, going, "Wow, I think I'm back on the podcast." What did you say, Kevin? I'm sorry. I was just listening to your voice. And I'm like, okay. Total sweetheart. But as a moderator, you're going to have to totally change everything and just go with simple questions, so much for complex answers and what's going to happen. You know,
you got to go with the flow.
You got to learn to go with the flow. Folks who think moderating is easy.
Nope. And sometimes you take all the brunt of everything too. But I was on the Walker Stalker cruise this year and I had three of the cast members for an 11 p.m. panel. And I had all these in-depth questions, which was really dumb because right. It was a drunken boatload of cruise goers. And it all just ended up being goofy jokes and rolling around on the floor and stuff. And it was super fun. But if that had been my first day, I would have been lost. But I was like, nope, you got to go with it.
When I did Cobra Kai, I was moderating the Cobra Kai panel. And
oh my God, I'm so jealous.
You didn't know that?
That's like my golden unicorn. Yeah.
Let me tell you, they are both, those guys are both as cool in person as they are, as they seem like they are. Like legitimate. Billy Zabka is funny as hell. Just
I love him on that show. He's so good.
He's the exact same guy. He's playing himself, you know. And Ralph Macchio, he's obviously more seasoned, so he's much more of a professional in many ways, but he's very down to earth, very nice guy. He actually, I'll tell you quick, now I'm name dropping, I guess, but when we did the panel, I had asked him before if we can get a picture afterward, because it's very, C2E2 is very high paced, just like every other convention. They have to get to another appointment as soon as the panel's over, right? And I'd asked him if I can get a picture. When it was all over, his agent is just saying, "Ralph, we got to go. He's like, no, we said we'd get a picture. And his agent's like, we don't have time. And he said, no, he just did this for us. We're going to do this for him. So we went over and took this. It was just like the coolest thing that probably meant the world to me and didn't mean anything to anybody else. But I thought that was a very, very cool moment of celebrities that, you know, people don't see, I guess. But at that panel, there was a father and son who show up. And they're in opposing Cobra Kai gi. They're one's wearing the Cobra Kai black and the other one's wearing the Miyagi-Do white. His son is. And they're asking questions on, they're both fans of the movies. You can tell this kid who's probably 6 years old, his dad has made him or asked him to watch Karate Kid multiple times. This kid already knew everything about the history. They knew about Elizabeth Shue. I mean, this kid just is well versed. And it was just like a beautiful thing to see a father and a son have this thing to bond over.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like a lot of the really cool questions in panels are from little kids who just come up and they're really cute. And the actors always like to, you know, slow down and pay attention to what they're saying, mm-hmm. get into a little conversation with them. But can I tell one of my favorite panel moments?
Sure.
So I think still to this day, it's been years ago now, but my favorite one was, it was a nighttime panel with Matt Smith, Karen Gillan, and Arthur Darvill from Doctor Who.
Nice.
And it was at this beautiful space in San Francisco right next to the water, and it was all dark, and there was this big crack of the universe on stage behind us. And backstage, they looked kind of harried by their day, so I brought them a couple of beers, and they were just like, oh, thank you. And then they just got all, you know, warmed up and everything. And when we got on stage, they were totally on fire, and they started at one point doing their rendition of Bohemian Rhapsody, and each one of them did a different part. And it was just, the energy was incredible, and the crowd was on fire. And then backstage, I went up to Matt Smith, and I was just like, that is the best panel we've ever had. And he just gave me this huge bear hug. I was like, and this is like a great moment right now. So that was really cool.
That's pretty fantastic.
It's interesting now doing a lot of moderating, because you will talk to some fans, and they're nice about it, but they're like, well, you know, I'd like to do this. And I'm like, hey, you know, maybe, you know, you can. Mm-hmm. But like you're saying, those special experiences are wonderful and the stories we can share. But let's face it, too, as moderators, sometimes you've got to work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
You know, let's face it, these folks have got a lot of distractions and a lot of things. You've got to be able to roll with what's happening. Sometimes with the fan questions aren't always... the best.
Yeah. Let's take 6 minutes to ask one question and tell you, I love the show. Or, I love the show.
Everybody wants a hug.
Yeah. You know, it can be a challenge, but it's nice. Like that story you're talking about, Jason, can just appreciate when you have those lightning in a bottle situations. But it still comes down to those times at the conventions when people get to make that connection. And it's not always with the celebrities. I've seen so many great interactions with folks, fans, who, when they realize someone they've been talking to online for a year, they get to meet them face to face. And that connection, you know, is just an amazing thing that sparks relationships and marriages and proposals and everything else that goes there. Yeah, and we've seen that in the Winona Earp fandom. There was a great story shared by Tim Rozon, who plays Doc on the show, when he was at HerperCon UK, about how a father came with his daughter. And this was the daughter's opportunity to truly let her father see something that she loved and to realize, you know, who she was as a person and what things meant to her. And that, I mean, that's life-changing stuff. And that doesn't happen in your average encounter. You know, it's amazing how at these cons, folks tend to be more open and just some amazing things will happen.
You know what I love about conventions? And yes, everything you just said, because it's fantastic. I always meet people that I've never met before and I've had interactions with online or something else. You know, they'll see you're there and they're like, hey, let's go meet up. And then you meet them and you're like, wow, I've got a new friend. You know, I've got a new pal. And that's a real friend now because I met him. That's my rule. I got to meet you to be a real friend. Or at least talk to you online. This counts. So, and also the cosplay. I have, you know, watching TV shows, movies, they're all fantastic. And it's like such a creative outlet and I love it. On the same token, some of the cosplay that I've seen over the years at these conventions rivals what we see in movies and TV. I mean, sometimes it's even more impressive. And these people put hours and hours and hours into just this look so they can show it for 2-3 days. And sometimes I wonder if it really gets talked about enough, but it's an amazing art in itself. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but that's kind of how I perceive it every time I go to a convention.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, I think that it can't be overstated that it's great to see the celebrities, but just feeling that camaraderie that you go to this place where you're specifically there because of, you all share this love mm-hmm. of something or this genre of something, and you can just kind of let your freak flag fly. You know, I mean, there's sort of a I don't have to pretend anymore kind of feeling, or I can be totally open, or, you know, I mean, maybe some people don't ever feel like they have to pretend, but still you're all there. Just, you're not, you don't have to work. You're just there in your appreciation of all this culture of whatever it is. And that naturally leads to striking up conversations with people, because you all know that you at least have this one thing that you can talk about. And it's, yeah, you meet people. And I mean, with Walker Stalker, we have volunteers at every convention, and a lot of them go to, from convention to convention, and they get like 8 people to a hotel room, and they party all night, and they just become fast friends, and they see, they look forward to seeing each other at the next convention and things like that.
I know, speaking a little bit about cosplay and being willing to take a risk, the Dragon Con 2015, I've been going about 10 years to Dragon Con. I've never done a professional photo op. I just, from the cost and such, you know, it just, I don't dislike them. It's just, I'd never done one. It kind of wasn't my thing. Dragon Con 2015, they had Anna Silk and Ksenia Solo, Bo and Kenzie from Lost Girl, one of my favorite shows. And their friendship dynamic, one of my favorites. So I'm like, okay, this is the year I'm going to get a photo op with those two ladies. I had seen online about a month before the convention, a woman had done a, this was when Lost Girl was coming to the end of its run, had done a thank you Lost Girl song, just a nice song, little song she had written. And I thought, oh, that's very creative. That was kind of cool. So I like followed her on Twitter, maybe one or two exchanges of a message, nothing big. I'm in line for the photo ops, first time doing it. And there's a woman standing across from me, and she's in Bo cosplay and a silk. And I compliment her and say, it's a very nice outfit. Start to strike up a conversation. It's this woman that had done that song. Her name was Bonnie. Maybe 5 minutes tops, because those lines move fast in the photo ops. That was it. I got my photo. Wonderful. She got hers, whatever. You know, we didn't even know each other. Fast forward 6 months, spring of 2016, start my podcast for Wynonna Earp. I don't have a co-host. I just decide there's something special about the show. I had seen the screener. I'm going to do a podcast. Hopefully I'm going to find one. I see that someone starts a fan account for Wynonna Earp fans. Thought, okay, this is, might be someone I want to interview. They've got a passion for the show. Reach out via DM. Who does it turn out to be? Bonnie, that I had met 6 months earlier.
Wow.
As soon as I had her on, we hit it off perfectly, and she became the co-host, and we are now big friends, and the whole fandom sees us as some of the leaders of the fandom. All because for the first time I got a photo op, and for the first time she'd ever gone to a convention was Dragon Con, because she was a fan of Lost Girl. Would we have ever connected in Wynonna Earp if we hadn't at least known each other? Maybe not. So you never know what these things can lead to.
Absolutely. It's amazing. Well, let's talk about the impact of fan reactions, and we'll talk about, say, the TV show campaigns as well. And I think one of these questions we kind of already talked about at the top, which, you know, how do fans turn the tide in positive ways, unless there's anything more you guys wanted to add to that.
Okay. I mean, it's interesting to me how sometimes these petitions are actually successful. Or I think in a little example I thought of in Game of Thrones is one of the characters said she was pregnant last season, but no one believed her. And so they had a character at the beginning of the final season mention, no, she really is pregnant. And I think that was a reaction to the fans not being confused about it, you know?
Yep.
So sometimes when, or there's the famous one from Lost is they introduced these characters, Nikki and Paolo, and everybody hated them. And so then they killed them off. So they can't actually have an impact on the story.
Well, and I spoke to, I interviewed writers of Lost a couple of years ago. And they did confirm that originally the ending was purgatory, and they changed it after that first year because so many fans guessed it.
Oh, no way. Yeah. I didn't ever know that.
And that's actually Trey Heinrichs, my co-host on The Black Coast Exposed. He made me go because of he was doing a podcast for started with an R. I can't remember the name of the show anymore. But so I went to this panel and ended up talking to the writers, and the writers actually worked on Lost. And I just point blank asked them that question. She's like, well, you can't quote me. And I'm like, so I won't say who the person is, but she said that was the original plan, was that it was purgatory. Wow. And they kind of changed it because of
too much. That's a big scoop.
But yeah, but I can't ever say who said it, so I can't really count it. Everybody's gonna say that's not true, and I can't say, well, that person said. But that's what I've heard. Yeah, same thing. I've noticed that some shows do kind of tweak things. I noticed that with Blacklist this year. At the beginning of the year, we kind of talked about fans, you know, on Twitter and everybody else, people were saying, why isn't the main character Liz asking questions in regards to what's going on? Because she always finds herself in a situation and she never asks like a direct question that would just answer whatever the problem is. Whether she gets an answer or not is beside the point. It's the matter of she never asked the question that everyone in that situation would ask. And as the season caught up to where that, you know, kind of, because, you know, they create the show long before it actually airs. By the time the show catches up to roughly where those two moments in time collided, you know, where they were seeing fan reaction to when the show started to air, you could tell a noticeable difference in how the character approached certain scenarios. So it's definitely, even though sometimes I feel like showrunners will say, no, we don't tailor anything to fan reaction. I 100% believe they do.
Mm-hmm. And I respect it sometimes when they don't. Like, I don't think most of the time it's not going to be a great show if you just did whatever the fans wanted, but they have to find that line, especially if, or just, you know, it's like anything. You listen to the criticism, take what you can use, ignore the rest.
And it's really tough in today's world where folks expect instantaneous response. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with social media and so forth, to, you know, as a showrunner, I mean, it's got to be such a double-edged sword, to be able to see what's connecting, to see, you know, what fans are identifying with, even if you could or couldn't see it in your actors or your stories. It's got to be a challenge. I know in the Wynonna Earp world, Emily Andrus, who's insanely active on Twitter and interacts with all kinds of fans all the time, has said that she akins it to, you know, the show is like a bus. She's driving the bus. You can jump on the bus. You can yell at her for the direction she's taking, but your only choice is to get off. You can't drive the bus. And, you know, so when fans start telling them where to go and so forth, it's, you know, it's just a delicate balance of understanding what they need to do. Like you said, Jason, they can't do everything the fans want. Let's face it. Fans want their favorite characters to be sitting on the couch watching a movie together, and we'd all be snoring watching that for 42 minutes. Yeah. You've got to create drama and problems. Let's face it. So, yeah. It's, you know, I think we who've been around for many, many years and fans of shows can appreciate what it's like now to know that a lot more of the showrunners, the writers, the actors are interacting with us. So it creates that wonderful connection. But also realizing that the business of creating that show, and creating something that, you know, advertisers want to pay money to put their ads on and networks will approve and so forth, it can be radically different than what a fan wants. And if you're the showrunner, man, you've got a million things coming at you.
Mm-hmm. And I think in my experience, and what really gets me is fans, like, it's pretty much what you just said, Kevin, they want everything to go well for the characters because they're in their emotional response to it as if it was real life. Like, oh no, I don't want them to be in any trouble or to suffer at all. And I'm like, boring.
Well, and I've seen this, and I don't know if you guys have, but sometimes when you get a very convoluted issue that happens in a TV show, Westworld's a prime example, because that show can be very complicated.
Too much.
No. Yeah. Sometimes definitely too much. And, you know, when you see a group and there is a large portion of them that are actively involved, they're very passionate. They follow every single frame of the show, just like they do for a lot of shows that people are passionate about. You will see people that are genuinely confused about something, and fans, you know, I'm not talking about the angry ones that say that was dumb, that was stupid, whatever. But there will be fans that will kind of listen and explain. They'll listen to what you're not understanding, and they'll explain it, and not in a condescending way or not in a sarcastic, like, just, hey, here's what I got from it. What did you get? And then people, you see a whole conversation going, and that's a beautiful part of fandom that we don't talk Absolutely. About enough.
Mm-hmm. And I think Lost really helped birth the whole podcasting about a TV show thing, because you mm-hmm. didn't know what the hell was going on, and you needed
needed help. Yes,
yeah, I agree. And so then other podcasts start, well, let's just do a podcast about any TV show. And Westworld's, I feel like, a lot like that too. So it's fun. It's fun to try to figure out.
And I don't know about you guys, but I find it fascinating now to watch a little bit from afar, especially if it's not a show that I'm maybe very engaged in. When something happens and you can tell there's confusion of what it meant, and then you have to look at these interviews with the showrunners or writers trying not to blatantly say, hey, this is what we meant when they try to talk around it, hoping people's little light bulbs go off.
Right.
And it's like, on the one hand, I'm glad to be getting a richer experience. On the other hand, I don't want to have it explained to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I can't get it by just watching it, then there's a problem here.
I mean, yeah, that show, like I was just saying, it's fun to try to figure this stuff out, but sometimes maybe they take it a little too far. I mean, it's a delicate balance. There's a line there. And also every show has a different, you know, it's all relative. So you do want to have some shows that are just practically inscrutable because that appeals to a certain kind of person. And then you want other shows where you don't have to work your brain at all to watch. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, for most people, probably something in between.
Theories. I love watching when people have diehard theories on something, fans, because as soon as they subscribe to it, as soon as they say, I'm planting my flag here, everything that happens, they tailor how they explain it to people to fit whatever their theory is. And I love that. And I know I probably shouldn't love it, but I love it because you see so many fascinating like debates back and forth, and people will just not so much twist it, but kind of just bend it a little bit so it fits whatever their mindset is, and they will not abandon it. And I mean, you could come out and say, hey, that's not true. And they're like, I don't know, man, this happened, this one thing. And they're just, I love watching that. That's a cool thing in fandom that I just love to experience.
Well, especially if they can keep an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's when we talk about sometimes in fandom, but when you have a movie or show that is going to make people think, and you can tell things are going to go in multiple or could go in multiple directions, you get, like you said, fans in each of the different camps. And when you can have a great discussion about it, either on a podcast or online, I love that people can, and I say this all the time with our podcast listeners, when people can give me a new perspective on something, I just adore that. Because, you know, people say, well, you do a podcast, you're an expert. I'm like, no, I hate the expert word. Okay, I may have seen the episode multiple times, but I saw it through my eyes. I want to see it through your eyes if you saw something different. So please tell me and get that out. And that's when it's fascinating. But like you said, Aaron, the problem can be sometimes when they want to twist everything to fit their theory and they get defensive. That's not the fun side of it at all.
It can be fun to read.
Well,
it's fun to go to a boxing match.
Yeah. Too. It's like, wow, they're really not giving that up. They're just going to keep going with that. Okay. That's fine. That's interesting. So how have you personally witnessed the talent responsible showrunners directly? I mean, Kevin, you kind of talked about a little bit where they're directly interacting within fan circles. I mean, to some degree.
Oh, Winona, 100%. I mean, Emily Andrus, part of the reason why this show has taken off is because how much she is a member of the fandom, in the sense that, you know, she will interact with fans. She will answer questions. You know, she will share her honest opinions on things sometimes. So you definitely get some fascinating stuff coming from her that can make the fans very much feel like, you know, they're having a special experience, and, you know, other cast members as well, sometimes. But it's interesting how much they have to tiptoe around answers and be careful on things that are said, you know, and, you know, going back to doing panels, you know, as a moderator, I want to be respectful of not trying to put someone on a difficult spot, be it cast or writer either. I mean, that's why a lot of fans will want to, you've got to be careful there, but, you know, some of the show folks, you know, when they're running things and some of them just, let's face it, Emily, like some other showrunners, has got the personality that can deal with it. Mm-hmm. Some showrunners just can't, and you just watch them wilt and die on social media because they can't interact.
Yeah, I remember Walking Dead has had a few showrunners at this point, and the second showrunner, Glenn Mazzara, he used to go on Twitter just about every day and just answer people's questions and chat and stuff, and I always thought that was really cool of him to do.
Have you noticed a lot of actors are doing that now? I mean, they're responding when the show is airing, they're getting involved on Twitter. That seems to be the new, I don't know if it's in contracts or what, but it seems to be the new trend.
I'm not on Twitter all that much, but maybe I should be because that sounds really cool.
Yeah, and I know in the ARPA fandom, that's, again, a big part of why the show is where it's at, is because when it airs, you have the majority of the cast not only live tweeting, but responding to fan tweets and giving giving fans, you know, kudos for good jokes and retweeting fan tweets. And so it makes it a very much a party. again, and I think this is fascinating for those of us who are fans of TV shows. Again, you're looking at Wynonna Earp, a genre show on the sci-fi channel with a smaller audience. What are you going to do to promote your show? You don't have the advertising budget. You've got to have the fans talking it up to other fans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being smart enough to be active on the social media side, to be very interactive. It's one thing to just tweet. And actually, a couple of the actors, Melanie Scafano, the lead in the show, has mentioned that she had live tweeted for other shows before, and she thought it was just like shouting into the darkness, because the fans on Wynonna Earp, you know, shouted back and you know, were very interactive. So it's a different situation. I'm sure, Jason, if you go on Twitter and check some shows, I don't know all of them well. Some have very interactive fan bases. Some of them don't. Mm-hmm. They're more of the closed in, I'm only doing my part of what's going on here. So you can't make it work for all shows.
Well, you got me curious about the Walking Dead actors now, because I wouldn't be surprised if at least some of them are doing things like that, but I haven't checked.
Redis is he's always engaged.
Yeah. He tweets a lot.
Saving TV show campaigns, they've worked on occasion in this day and age. I mean, there's so many products out there. It's like everybody, there's TV shows on every streaming station. It feels like they can save everything at any point. Have you guys ever been taken aback or directly affected by any of these campaigns? Jason, have you ever been affected by one emotionally or otherwise?
What are some things that have been saved?
Oh God, Lucifer, Designated Survivor, Family Guy.
Timeless.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Futurama was saved, but I know it kept coming back from the dead, and
I think so.
I was glad about that, but I can't think of anything else.
Veronica Mars, there's one. Firefly, that's definitely one. Serenity.
Yeah, the movie definitely was. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, every time you guys say the word Firefly, I just feel a pang in my heart.
Aww. We got the movie, though. The movie pretty much did everything I needed it to do.
Yeah, but I wanted more.
Yeah, we all did.
What about you, Kevin? You guys have kind of saved Wynonna Earp based on the campaign. You already talked about that a little bit, but anything stick out to you?
Yeah, just, you know, as I said, season one, Wynonna Earp did not have great numbers. When it ended, when the season finished airing, we hadn't heard anything from Sci-Fi. And we got active on social media and started campaigns with theme days and writing letters to Sci-Fi, sending emails to them, and through some connections we had, started hearing that higher ups at Sci-Fi are like, who are these fans? And I can't get to my inbox because of all the emails I've got. So it definitely, you know, got the attention of Sci-Fi. And actually, you know, they renewed the show about 3 or 4 weeks after that season ended. And eventually Sci-Fi rebranded with it's a fan thing as their slogan, and directly referenced the Wynonna Earp fandom as a prime example of what they were hoping to achieve with some other shows, is such an engaged fandom. So certainly the renewals, again, because the numbers are not high for Wynonna Earp from a traditional Nielsen or ratings point of view. So the fan activities and fundraising and other things there are very much a part of it. And actually, in a very odd twist that some folks might not be aware of, Sci-Fi, it was announced at the San Diego Comic-Con panel in 2018 that the show had been renewed for season four. Mm-hmm. Very exciting. But then when the show is normally starting to shoot, has been right around the beginning of each calendar year when they start shooting, it wasn't shooting yet. And we were starting to get some rumblings, something wasn't quite right. And then it came to light that even though Sci-Fi had renewed it, the production company, the company that actually owns the property, Wynonna Earp, was in serious financial straits, so the production was on hold.
Ruh-roh
is right. So apparently some folks making financial decisions didn't make some good ones, and IDW didn't have the money. So we started, you know, making a lot of noise, and that got the, you know, the show's hashtag trending, got us in front of some entertainment writers who are now looking into things, Hollywood Reporter and so forth, were starting to put up articles, and that kind of got the attention of IDW. And while we are still in limbo right now, you know, IDW has tweeted and commented officially that, you know, they very much saw what the Earpers were doing, and you know, they're working very hard. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that it will get back on track. But that was the fandom coming out and supporting a show that, you know, was very much a big part of what they wanted to see. And in this case, it wasn't a network. It wasn't, you know, renewing it. The interesting thing on that was, as soon as this news broke that the show was kind of in limbo, vice presidents at Sci-Fi were tweeting, yes, we love the show, it's not us.
Right.
So they knew what would have happened if the ERPers thought it was a Sci-Fi issue from what's happened in the past. So they very much got behind the, you know, politely, hey, it ain't us. So that was kind of fascinating to see play out. And then ERPers rallied. We started, folks started buying digital billboards in Times Square. To this point, the ERPers bought over 100 billboards run there. That got more press coverage, which got more, you know, some of the folks aware. So yeah, the fans are very much keeping this show, shall we say, alive because of their support of it on the social media side and in other creative ways to be able to do that.
That's fantastic, man. Mm-hmm. I remember Veronica Mars coming back. That was a big one for me. You know, basically everybody donate and we can make the thing happen if we can hit $5 million. And we did, and they made it. And I got a Veronica Mars movie, and now it's coming back again. Like, it just won't die.
I'm glad Deadwood is back, even though I wasn't into that. It just always bothered me that the show ended abruptly, and that's probably why I never got into it, because I knew that, so I didn't want to go back and watch it. But now that the Deadwood movie came out, I might go back and binge the whole thing.
That I'm actually in the middle of watching that. Boy, okay. They swear a lot.
I know. You know, that's kind of why I stopped watching it, not because I'm a prude or anything, but it was just so distracting.
Yeah.
But Arrested Development is another one I thought of that I was glad to see come back. I always loved that show.
Oh, that was
now one thing, great. And I'd be curious to hear what you two think on this as longtime TV fans, that I definitely think the, quote, save the show or fan-based initiatives have affected is, in the last few years, we have seen a significant number of shows who get announced ends. There is no more of the sudden cancellation. Mm-hmm. They'll be renewed for what's called a final season, or it'll be announced mm-hmm. it's a final season. So folks
like
can...
Arrow, right?
Yeah, can put a button on it. And I think that's because these network folks are realizing that if we do a lot of this cancellation for something that's got a passionate, a loud following, we're just going to waste our resources trying to deal with what'll come with it. So I think the fan initiatives there, well, they're never going to save every show, but I think a lot of them, once they get a couple seasons in, realize it's smarter to tell fans as a planned end.
Mm-hmm. It's human nature to crave closure. Even if you start a conversation with somebody, go, hey, you know what I found out the other day, and then just walk off, they'll be chasing after you.
Yep, that's true.
You know, you want to feel some kind of a sense of closure with something, and I love that. Breaking Bad is one of my all-time favorite shows, and I was really happy that they decided when to end that and ended it just the way they wanted it, on their own terms.
Yeah, ditto. And I wish more shows would do that. I'm firmly convinced you can't name many, probably on one hand, the amount of TV shows, especially if they're of a serialized nature, that have benefited from going longer than 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I mean, I kept saying I think they should end Walking Dead. And now with season 9, it's actually got this renewed energy and I'm really enjoying it. So I'm like, all right, let's see what you got. But I feel like... AMC just wants to keep that thing going as long as they can, keep milking that cow, and that can only spell, you know, something not good. If they want to end it on a good note, they're going to have to decide to end it, because if they don't decide, then the only time it's going to end is when it's totally lost all its ratings because it's not that good anymore.
Right. Fans help. I remember I got an ending to Jericho. That's the one I was trying to think of. Jericho, by people sending nuts to mm-hmm. CBS constantly. Yeah. And I've got 6 more episodes that ended that whole series. And I loved it. I was really appreciative that I finally got an ending to it, even if it was just 6 episodes.
I'm getting the idea I should start a fan campaign to end The Walking Dead.
That's pretty awesome.
Speaking of Jericho, I mean, when this current situation with IDW and the finances came up, ERPers, I mean, you now have educated fans. We were now getting, myself and Bonnie and also Bridget, the three of us have kind of been out in front in the Wine Owner fandom for years. We're getting messages with ideas of what we can send to IDW,
mm-hmm.
initiatives from the show that are along the same lines of the nuts. I mean, so fans are educated on what gets press, on what gets attention, on what they can do, you know, to make that difference now. And this is something that wasn't there years and years ago. So the landscape has changed, and it's good to see the networks smartening up, at least for the most part, to adjust to that. But like you said, Jason, I mean, if you're AMC, with all due respect to the creative nature of The Walking Dead, the ratings are so high, it, as you said, it's a cash cow.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, why would you want to end it?
It's still huge.
Right.
Yeah, it's still making them money.
It's I don't totally understand the mechanics of it, but some shows are not owned by the network, but they're just distributed or
right. You know, mm-hmm.
But Walking Dead is fully controlled and owned by them, so they can do whatever they want with it.
Frank Darabont still trying to get a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're getting to wrapping this up, and I kind of want to talk about your personal experiences, yourself or other people familiar to you, you know, and amazing things. We've kind of talked about a lot of them already, but is there anything cool that has happened to you?
I'm still sitting here pinching myself that they named a Winona Earp character after me.
Hey, see, look at
wow.
That.
and this is one of those experiences because I was at a convention, Klexicon. Anna Silk, the lead of Lost Girl, was a guest there. And so was Emily Andrus, the Winona Earp showrunner, who also was showrunner for Lost Girl for a couple of seasons. And Anna broke the news that she was going to be a guest star on Winona Earp in the coming season, which was exciting in and of itself. A lot of folks are fans of both shows. And naturally, the moderator's like, oh, can you tell us anything about your character? She's like, well, no, I can't say very much other than she's mysterious and her name is Kevin. And I'm sitting there in the audience, and for a couple of seconds, it doesn't register with me, very honestly, until everybody sitting around me turns around and looks at me and says, is that named after you? And I'm like, I have no idea. That might be a nice coincidence. A few minutes after the panel, I am passing Emily Andrus as she's going to her autograph table. Hadn't seen her at the convention yet. Gives me a hug and says, oh, hey, got to run. I hope it's okay. I named Anna Silk's character after you. Bye.
That's really cool.
And do you talk about a moment that I could not speak, Aaron? That was it right then and there. So to have Emily do that, and she brought it up in interviews, you know, for all of the support I've done for the show and all. I mean, come on. I can't. I still today pinch myself that it actually happened. And the thing that just made the cherry on top for me is we did an interview with one of the folks from the show, Dominique, who I mentioned earlier, a couple months after that episode had aired. And we were talking about her character arc. And literally, just as we finished her answering a question, she turned to me during the interview and said, so, Kevin, what did you think about Anna Silk? We were talking about it on set. We thought it was a great thing for Emily to do, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting here thinking, the people on the show that I love are talking about me? What's wrong with this picture?
That's pretty cool.
But it's a case, too, of where the people from the show respect the fans of the show so much to do something that they know other fans will appreciate. It creates that connection that, you know, it's just something pretty amazing.
They named a psychiatric facility after Troy Heinrichs on The Blacklist. It was one of my favorite moments ever. I'm like, they get it. He's nuts.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's always pretty fantastic when you get to be part of the show. We actually had an incident, and I'll try to make a long story very short, but on The Blacklist, when Megan Boone was pregnant, she's the female lead of the show, a lot of fans wanted to make that a point of discussion. They were kind of upset that we weren't talking about it on the podcast. Well, we addressed those fans and said, no, we're not going to talk about that. That's her personal life. We're not going to do that. Well, she heard this, apparently, and she reached out to us and said, I want to come on your show. I'm going to give you an exclusive interview. I really appreciate you guys doing that because so many people were kind of making it a gossipy thing at that time. And we just didn't want to play a part in that. So she said, well, let's come on. I'm going to do your show. I want to do an exclusive interview. That all leads to a couple years later. Okay. So a couple years later, they have their 100th episode and they invite us out to New York City, which is fantastic. We had a nice fan meetup and we also, you know, did a lot of New York stuff. Troy and I, we had never been there. So, or at least not downtown in the city. So we really had a fun time. And then we went down to the set. We got to go to the set of The Blacklist, all the actors, talk to Jane Spader, talk to Megan Boone, talk to Harry Lennox, all of them were there. We had great interviews and everything else and took part in their 100th episode celebration. That alone was fantastic. As we're leaving, we run back into Megan Boone, who she completely remembered us. 100%. I mean, you got to remember, actors are, you know, they're talking to people all the time. It's hard to remember who interviewed them and everything else. But she remembered us. She got all excited and she's like, you know what, guys? do you have time? And we were getting ready to leave, and they actually told us she should go. And like, well, yeah, we have time for you, you know, one of those things. And so she brought us backstage to watch them film a scene that they were doing at that time. She had to sit down in the director's chairs and just enjoy it as basically like part of the crew. So we're watching her film a scene, and it was actually a big spoiler for what was coming up. So we had to keep that under wraps and whatnot. And as it's going, I didn't know this, but on the show, I mean, I know one of the directors happens to be a former heartthrob, you know, famous actor, especially in the 80s and 90s. And so we're watching this, and I'm a huge movie fan. And all of a sudden the director comes out, and he comes over and introduces himself. And he's like, "Hey, I'm Andrew McCarthy." And I just said, "Well, of course you are." So yeah, Andrew McCarthy was directing that episode. The only reason we got to meet him and to see that happen is because Megan Boone appreciated that we were respectful of her personal life. It's just all of these things go hand in hand. The fan appreciation, you know, just being respectful of each other. Because those actors, they do love fans. They do love all of the energy you put into the shows. And we hear it all the time. And that's the best part about being, I guess, I don't want to say on the front lines, but being podcasters and being in that environment is you get to see it more. You get to see how much they appreciate it, how much they love that you're a part of their community, that you encourage their work, that you support their work. It all means the world to them. It really, really, really does. The creator, John Bokenkamp, has been on our show numerous times, and he doesn't have to do that. He does it because he loves the fans. He loves it. He even writes the show to kind of toy with them at times. He'll toy with the different theories that are going around and kind of write things so they kind of cater a little bit to whatever you're thinking that day, to those insane theories that people love. It's just, it's a great community these days, and how creators involve the fans is pretty fantastic on Twitter and everything else. Sorry, I rambled for a lot, but it's a cool story to me. It's a cool story.
I've seen a few onstage proposals at conventions where the guy will come to us beforehand and ask if they can do it. So we set it up with some premise to get her up on stage, and we tell all the actors ahead of time, and then they propose. And that's always really fun to watch because so far they've all said yes. One time, one of the special effects guys made a finger, and you know, like a zombie finger, and put the ring on it.
Oh, so that's awesome!
But you know, aside from this podcast, that's the biggest thing for me. I mean, I'm, you know, it's my job right now, and it's the best, my favorite thing I've ever done, as far as anything like that goes. But what stands out though is I got to go be a zombie on The Walking Dead a couple of times.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's awesome.
That was incredible. That was like peak experience for sure. Get shot in the head.
You said a couple of times, so when you go back, are they making you a different kind of zombie, or do you get the same kind of makeup, or how do they shake it up?
Yeah, there's a few, well, at least back then, there were a few different types of zombies. There were the hero ones that got the prosthetics because you were going to be closer to the camera. Mm-hmm. And then there were one level back, and you got makeup and clothes and everything, but not prosthetics. And then back from that, even you wouldn't even have the makeup because you're so far back, people wouldn't be able to see. But so the first time I was that second level, and so you know Walking Dead, right?
Absolutely.
It was the season 2 finale when all the walkers stormed Herschel's farm.
Oh.
And there was a point where Rick and Carl were coming down off of Dale's RV, off this ladder, and there's a bunch of us reaching out towards them. And I was one of those. And they took it as a still, and they put it up on AMC's Walking Dead website. And they put like a tag on it that said Walking Dead, so that covered up all the other zombies, so you just saw me reaching out for Rick, and it was there for like 3 months.
And you felt like you peaked. This is it.
Yeah, that was it, man. But then the next year I got to go back again, and I got the prosthetic treatment that time, so that was really fun. I got to sit in the makeup chair for a few hours and get all done up.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, we're just
big geeks who love these shows. So to be able to get experiences like that, I mean, come on.
Yeah. I mean, it's like pinching yourself, yeah, like you said. Like,
yeah, perpetually.
Really happening. Like, I remember when I first walked onto set, or not set, backstage, and they point me to this warehouse, and I go in, and there's all these zombies in various stage of makeup standing in a line, and I'm just getting like goosebumps all over. Mm-hmm. Like, this is incredible. Yeah, that was great. I was practicing my zombie walk at home for weeks before that.
That's it. That's the one.
Bingo.
Yeah, I know in the ERPR community, as you're asking, Aaron, and there have been some. I witnessed a proposal at San Diego Comic Con, I think 2 years ago, mm-hmm. In the line for autographs with the cast right there. That was a wonderful thing to see. It was a yes.
That's good, because it's sad when it's not.
It was sad if it's not. So yeah, that was wonderful. But there have been so many relationships that are starting and. Just watching it happen online and in person at all these events is really, I mean, like I said, it's real life coming into our, crazy genre show themed world. It's wonderful to see when you see that much happiness happening. And you know it was directly related to because you're a fan of this TV show.
Mm-hmm. I was invited to marry two fans of our podcast. This is a true story. And went to Florida and did the whole, do you take this person, that whole thing.
Did you know them?
Well, I came to know them. I didn't know that, they were fans of the show, and we became friends and became friendly, then became friends. And then they just asked if I would be the guy. So I did. And what was really cool about it, that was a great moment and whatnot, but just seeing those two, because when you get to meet them and you see them, like their whole bond, or a big part of their bond, was entertainment. They came together, they're fans of a lot of the same things. They actually went to Hawaii for the Lost gathering, where everybody just gathers and becomes one with Lost. They tour the island and they kind of just become family in that respect. That is a pretty fantastic thing. I mean, to be part of that, we're going to go all the way to, we're going to spend our vacation with fans of a TV show. And it ends up being one of the most amazing memories for you. I just think it's not something I did, but they did it. And it's pretty fantastic that it works for them.
It is.
Yeah.
Yep.
We need more of that stuff in the world.
We need more of that. Yes. That's what I was going to say. We need more of that stuff happening in today's world.
Very, very much. In terms of, I was at, I was, we were at South by Southwest once with my co-host, Brian Williams, and he is a big, huge Game of Thrones fan. And we were at this cocktail party, and Nikolov Costa-Waldau, plays Jamie Lannister, was there. And it just watching him basically just eye hump him from across the room was a pretty fantastic thing. And he got to come over and meet him. And of course, I intentionally embarrassed him that, I just probably said some things I shouldn't have, and he made me leave. But it was pretty great to see.
Get out of here.
No, I did. Yeah. I went up to Jamie Lannister. I just keep calling him Jamie Lannister because his name's very complicated. And I just said, hey, you see that guy over there? He's been eye humping you all night. I used cruder language. And he just starts laughing. I'm like, and there's nothing. I think at the very least, it's worth a handshake. And he went over and shook his hand and everything else. And then he kind of told him what I said. And he just was embarrassed. And he's like, let's go. But those kind of fan moments are fantastic. So how has your fandom experiences, how has it directly affected your life, both as podcasters and as fans of entertainment in general?
Mm-hmm. I mean, just being a fan is great. Like, we're in this age of amazing television, and being in this appreciative mindset, it's sometimes I get really moved or captivated by something. And I'm about to start podcasting about the third and final season of Legion. Mm. And do you guys watch that?
I watched the first year. I haven't seen the second.
No, not when I watched.
Second season, there's a couple episodes in there that just move me to tears. And I love that, even after thousands of hours of TV, I can still be moved like that. I just think it's so cool that they're such great. I consider it art. I consider great games and TV shows to be art. There's some amazing games out there that are just really moving too, or scary as hell. I just like to be emotionally moved somehow. So as a fan, that's kind of what I'm looking for. I want to care about something or be scared by it or some kind of emotional response to it, because I'm dead inside and I need to be moved. No, but I mean, you know, I feel like it's so great that we have all of this stuff, and it's, you know, I'm captivated with it, and I built this whole hobby slash career out of it, and doing the podcast itself has brought me into contact with all these people like you guys, you know, or different kinds of people that I never would have known before. So it's, even though I started this and I'm still a huge fan, a lot of it is not even about The Walking Dead anymore. It's about getting to do this thing with my friend and mm-hmm. all these people that listen to us, getting to commune with them and connect. Just all these great things that have come out of it for me.
What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, it's, you know, for me at this point, it's very much still, it's a hobby. It's a big part of my life outside of family and work. It's probably, I won't say it's the only thing, but it's certainly a big, big part. But it's because it is so rewarding, as Jason is saying, the people, the friendships that I've made, you know, these things are going to last long beyond when one owner goes off the air. I know that from the relationships and how they've developed from many of the folks that are there, along with others that are just continually coming in and finding the show. And because it is a show that very much, as I said earlier, is about inclusivity, about kindness, and the kind of things we all want to see, it's such a rush. The people in the fandom that I see that are, you know, doing things in their lives and moving themselves into better situations financially or whatever it might be, and using the show and some of the things that they've learned from the show and some of the characters, you know, that are all very real and do screw up like all of us, but do, you know, eventually make the right choices. It's that, as Jason said, it moves me. The fandom moves me. The show moves me. I mean, I've got coming up here at ERP Expo this weekend on the show real quick. I'm a big fan of the ERP sisters. The two ERP sisters is a core relationship for me. And last year when the folks who were running this con, ERP Expo, reached out to my podcast host and I, we saw them at another one of the ERP cons. And they said, you know, they invited us to be guests and to moderate their panels, which was wonderful. And they said, do you have any ideas that might help us at the convention? And at that point, I said, well, so far, none of the conventions have ever done just an ERP sister panel instead of the whole cast, just Melanie Scrofano and Dominique together. And being the big ERP sister fan, I would, of course, love to moderate it. And they were able to get them as guests. So for the past few months, the fandom has been having a blast with me, talking about how excited, how emotional I'm going to be there. People, they're offering to have Kleenex sponsor the panel and a lot of other fun things to realize how much it means to me to be able to do that in their relationship and sending me ideas for questions and so forth. And I share on Twitter when I wear t-shirts from the show just to talk it up. And a couple of my favorites are some ERP sister ones. And I had a couple of people reach out and say, hey, I've got an ERP sister shirt. Can we take a picture together? And after I had a few of them mention it, I'm like, well, there's got to be a lot. So I said, what if we all got together after the panel to take a group photo? Hmm. If you're going to be wearing your ERP sister shirt. And we had cast members reach out and say, oh, when is that? I want to be there. And I think we're up to 60 or 70 people who are just going to come together because we're fans of a certain subset of the show to celebrate that we love and what it means to us. And that's just, thinking about that just blows my mind, because it's just a natural way for people who are sharing a common experience to be able to identify with it and the emotion of what it brings to us. And all the stories I get from folks of their sister relationship and how it's helped them connect with siblings they maybe had grown apart from, and seeing it on the show or hearing me talk about it, getting emotional about it, as I do, even as a guy in today's world, they really appreciate that. And it's just me being me, but it means something to other people. And as Jason said, to be moved by an entertainment program and to be able to enjoy that That is a special thing I never want to take for granted.
I remember, here's what fandoms meant to me. I remember as a kid, I used to wear a fedora everywhere I went. I had a generic whip. I remember climbing trees and swinging on branches, trying to be Spider-Man. I used to take, do you guys remember rulers in school, obviously, and they had like the metal strip down them? Every year, I would pull those out and I would bend them around my wrist and make a web shooter because I was a diehard fan of Spider-Man. And then as I've grown up, I've dressed as almost every character I've ever loved for Halloween. It's just like fandom is in my blood. And podcasting is an extension of that. And I remember when I first started doing it, it was just so I could kind of talk about movies and TV to people who are just as passionate as me, but not pretentious. There's a lot of podcasts at that time where, hello, we're going to see a movie and instead we're going to talk about it. We're going to pick it. You know, that's how it was. And I couldn't stand that. So I wanted to just have a podcast where it was like people that I know and having real conversations. And it has ended up, it's evolved and it's created so many friendships. I have so many people that I'm friends with now that I didn't know before I started a podcast, which is just weird to me. It's even brought me closer to other friends. I've got a friend, Tyler, who I was already friends with, but I became a closer friend to him because I realized, wow, we have a lot of shared interests and love in terms of entertainment. I'm going on a cruise. You know, Jason, you talked about a cruise. I've never been on a cruise. Next week, I'm going on a cruise for the Hollywood Outsider with dozens of people, and all of them are because of a podcast. And I just never in a million years did I think that A, I would ever be on a cruise, or B, be doing that with people that just, you know, I talk to on the internet radio every now and again. It's a surreal, very, very surreal feeling. And, you know, all the cool stuff, you know, yeah, the name dropping and stuff that we talked about earlier, where we're talking about when we met with these people, that's all great. And I'm not taking anything away from that, but it's nothing compared to the relationships that have been built and friendships and ups and downs and people that have been there for me when I've had ups and downs, you know, that you've met because of doing this, because you're a fan of a thing and not just because of the podcast, but because that puts you in the middle of fandom. You meet people at these conventions and online and everywhere else because of this thing you love. It's fantastic. And I've seen it. I've personally seen it where fans have helped people get out of some really, really dark times and they're struggling and you can tell it while they're online and you can tell it while they're, you know, they used to be really fun talking about whatever they love. And then just recently they started seeming a little dour. And then the other fans jump in and they care about them and they listen to them and they'll talk to them and they try to help them and talk them out or help them out of really, really bad times. And that is an amazing thing to witness. And that never gets talked about, or at least doesn't get talked about enough. You know, that's the beauty of fandom to me.
It doesn't get appreciated because it makes a real impact in people's lives, unlike some of those folks, as you said, who are just being pretentious, reviewing things, or fans bashing something because they have this need to be the bully. So, yeah, it's, like I said, I hope it never gets old for me, and it makes some of the extra efforts and time that go into doing some of these things so much easier to do when you realize you're helping folks to be better. You're helping them, as you said, Aaron, sometimes to be in better situations in their lives and sometimes just to make us all be a little bit better at dealing with other people.
Great idea for a show, man. I love it. You're right. This stuff doesn't get talked about a lot. And as I'm sitting here, I'm like, oh, this is really fresh, something new.
Hopefully.
It's good.
Hopefully. You know, it's one of those things where fans are passionate, probably the most passionate people in the world. Fans of entertainment are just like so passionate, which means they also take things to heart. So, I mean, we are fans, people listening are fans, people on the internet are fans. So like the next time you see somebody having a bad day or something, or you see them getting jumped on online, come to their defense or just, you know, hear them out or just help them just be a fan. And I really, really believe that makes all the difference in the world to so many people.
You know, you wrapped it up pretty good there. It's a great example from what the three of us have been saying in different approaches sometimes. And just be open, be willing to maybe put yourself out there a little bit. Maybe, as we said, let the freak flag fly a bit, which might get you some crap, certainly in the average lunchroom or the average office, but you know, you might be amazed at the the special people you might be able to meet that could really turn into that lifelong friendship or even more. So you got to take a risk sometimes. Do you want to get the bigger reward?
Yep. And it is a risk because you're opening yourself up. You're being vulnerable, but it's well worth it. It's better than the alternative because it leads to all the kinds of things that we're talking about.
Absolutely. Well, where can people, you know, we are podcasters at heart, which means we know how to pimp things. So where can people find you guys?
For my stuff, the primary location is at tuning it to scifitv.com, or if you're the Winona Earp focus, at winonaerppodcast.com for Tales of the Black Badge on any of your podcasting apps.
My network is Podcastica, so it's podcastica.com, and we're covering Fear the Walking Dead and Black Mirror and Handmaid's Tale and Lost right now, and Stranger Things and my favorite Legion are coming up. And then further down the line, we'll get back into Westworld and then any Game of Thrones spinoffs that manage to make it to air.
Oh, you are going to do the spinoffs when they come around, are you?
Absolutely, yeah.
That'll be interesting. I know they're doing, they're going back to the Age of Heroes a couple thousand years ago or something like that.
Yeah, I think that one has been greenlit for a pilot, and then they'll see if they want to actually make it a go.
I still want Arya west of Westeros.
You're not alone there.
And you guys, if you're listening to this, of course, thehollywoodoutsider.com, and you know where everything is. We're on Twitter at BIPOPcorn. I hope you guys really enjoyed this. Please check out these guys' shows. They're great at what they do, and I really do appreciate you both coming by and talking about this. This is a really, I think this has been a fantastic podcast, and I really hope people enjoy it.
Woohoo! Yeah, thank you, Aaron.
And remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. That's our tagline. What do you want me to tell you?